Give a man a fish and he will eat for a day. Teach a man to fish and he will eat forever. This powerful statement perfectly describes what a social enterprise is. By empowering people through tangible skills they can apply to jobs, the cycle of poverty continues to break and ultimately lifts up and brings a new powerful energy to the community. This model has been applied to many areas throughout Armenia and is quickly becoming a popular way of making a difference. Join us as we learn more about this compelling giving model and the impact it's making throughout the country. Pari Luis, my name is Sophia, and I'm the co-host of this podcast with Executive Director Peter Abajian. Today, we're joined by Dr. Gary Assarian, who specializes in clinical and anatomical pathology. Welcome to our show, Dr. Gary.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, Gary, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
So our first question for you is, how did you get involved with philanthropy in Armenia?
Well, it goes back to the roots of my father, who, Moassarian, was deeply involved in the Armenian community locally here and had a propensity to helping Armenian kids go through college, go to through medical school, and did a number of philanthropic ventures with on the behalf of Armenia during the earthquake, and then it kind of culminated into helping to build the Gomidas statue in downtown Detroit, which it stands as a monument to all Armenians in the area. So it kind of was instilled in me. Sometimes when you're a young 12-year-old and none of your friends around you are Armenian, and your dad is telling you, you know, you're Armenian, you have to do this, and you know, because of that, you just figure, well, I'm going to be Armenian. So that's what we did. And it was all in a positive way. And then I happened to marry a beautiful Armenian girl in of 44 years. And she shares the same passions that I do about helping people and things like that. Linda, my wife Linda, has done a lot of projects with the church and their knitting group and sending things over. And Peter has actually sent some of their products over to Yerevan and stuff like that. So I sort of got a taste for that. And then I kind of dove in when I was a young man. Being a pathologist, I was interested in sending chemical analyzers to the Children's Hospital in Armenia. I'd gotten close to visiting Armenia when I was a student in the Soviet era, but I only got to Georgia. But I understood sort of what the economic challenges were of the region and also how to get things accomplished over there. And it's not by buying equipment in the United States and sending the equipment there. You actually was smarter to buy it actually in Finland, no less. And I happen to have a relationship with that company. And so we were able to raise quite a bit of money and it taught me a lot of lessons. And I learned about philanthropy by watching how others did it. And working in a Catholic hospital, you get a flavor for it that you're not quite used to in church. And then you just digest what you've just witnessed, and then you kind of move on. But for me, it's sort of a passion of a forever part of my life. So that's probably it in a nutshell.
Yeah, deeply rooted passion. I think a lot of Armenians can relate to that, and that generational passion that continues. You do a lot of work in Gyumri. What specifically drew you to that area?
To be honest, I think Gyumri brought me in. I went to first time my wife and I Linda were able to visit Gyumri in 2017, and we were helping with the Debbie Arach model for Paros, and the demographics of what Gyumri is and what it isn't were sort of very attractive to me, and I think it was more the potential and the need kind of blossomed into one different thought after another. And then we put our heads together and got into a lot of projects there.
Yeah, it's, you know, the the way you described it as Gyumri drew you in is exactly how I feel about some of the work that we've done together there. It's really a exciting place. You know, apart from some of the work, you know, that you've done, that you've supported to, you know, help kids and help families, et cetera, you know, you've made job creation and vocational training a priority in your model of philanthropy. Can you tell us a little bit about those priorities?
Well, as you know, there's two types of aid. There's a humanitarian aid, which kind of is an immediate relief to a problem or issues. But they're quite different. Social enterprise, or they call it social entrepreneurship, is something that you can build upon to be able to increase the likelihood that the people in the project will be there when you're long gone. I don't have the wherewithal, and most people don't have the wherewithal to support these projects forever, but we do have the wherewithal to put the right people in place that the project can be self-sustaining. And that's really the issue with having a social enterprise is it takes a lot of planning, and you have to have the right partners to do it with. And you know, I it's a feather in the cap of Potos is that they're easy people to kind of brainstorm, and we can, if you want, you can talk a little bit about the wonderful beauty salon that we have that obviously didn't help me out much, but it's quite an undertaking. There are other groups that I get involved with that also do it. And I think that probably the best example would be like My Forest Armenia. It's great leadership, a guy who's driven, has a environmental impact a mission, but he also, as a result of doing stuff with me and myself and some others, kind of convinced him that the economic impact was just as critical. And now they have about $700,000 a year in expenses. He is a great fundraiser. Andre Gamushin is his name, from Belgium, and just does a great job. But he's deeply involved, and it just shows you what he kind of demonstrates, what the amount of time and effort it takes to do what Peter does on a daily basis. The economic impact, you know, is probably $3 to $5 million just in that region alone because of the people he's hiring. He's paying taxes and things. So for me, it's the most adaptable and addresses the systemic issues of the region rather than just, you know, brings firewood if they need firewood, so to speak. And it helps you build self-sufficiency. And that's kind of where my wife and I decided that we were going to nestle most of our efforts in providing people. And that's how the vocational program got launched.
Well, you know, when we got into this together, Gary, we took a look at the skill set and, you know, the massive unemployment that was Gyumri, and tried to figure out what we can do to employ people. And as you start, you know, peeling the layers away from that nut, you realize that, you know, the problem with the skill set in Gyumri is that it's minimal. You know, anybody, you know, because of the tough economic conditions, anybody that had a marketable skill either moved to Yerevan or went to Russia to work or something. So you ended up with a largely untrained labor force. And that's where we, you know, investigated this vocational training options together. You started supporting it at Debbie Arak so we could start working on the next generation to help them develop careers, career goals, you know, either apply to college or get a physical hands-on skill that they can, you know, master and then, you know, take care of their families with. And that's what led us to ultimately giving this social enterprise a shot. You know, we pitched to you the idea of a hair salon that would be a full service, you know, facials, makeup, eyelashes, you know, all that stuff that I don't really understand. But the goal of providing training for these people and giving them the skills they need and an excellent place to work in. So, you know, now I guess over the last year and a half or so, we've trained about 70 people. We calculated the success rate of those trainees, meaning, you know, somebody that's gone through the training program, are they working? Are they earning money for their families? And it looks like about 75, 76% of them are, which, you know, we're pretty happy about. As somebody that, you know, is funding this kind of idea and funding this kind of job creation. And, you know, it's a social enterprise because the funds from the for-profit beauty salon go back into funding the ongoing training in all these different areas. And that, you know, that cycle will continue. And, you know, it's not quite a break even yet, a year and a half in, but we're getting darn closer. You know, what are your thoughts so far, good, bad, or indifferent on, you know, how that project's going? And if you think there's, you know, perhaps other areas that we'll launch into as well with this kind of thing.
Well, I look at the package of things that we've done. We've had immediate impact through the hosiery latex hosiery factory and the sewing factory, and we said we're willing to be our own vocational school, and we will hire you to go and learn how to make a trade and make a talent or make a billable job if the person was honorable and would hire these people and hire them at a rate that we thought was appropriate or what we were doing. And plus, you know, in Armenia, the women, they have more obstacles to freedom and self-determination than the men do, certainly. And so that sort of caught our eye, and that those have been very successful. And we've even channeled to get people to, we paid for the internships of people at Digital Pomegranate, yep. Where those jobs are, you know, they're $20,000 a year jobs. And we were able to, I think, place two or three, but in the process, I think they hired more than that. And then we had a group of soldiers from the Artsakh War, the first war, it turned out their teacher went into business and hired them all. So that's really what, and the other good thing that we probably should mention probably first is that the people were staying in Gyumri. And if we're gonna develop a regional economic firehouse, then we need to make sure that people aren't just going to Yerevan and doing those sorts of things. So you have to look at things. And the beauty of, I think, trying to do this model is if you keep in mind that you're willing to be flexible and that the mission can change from time to time, just like at the Hiolani Center, we first off started, well, people were going to learn how to cut hair. And then the next thing you know, well, what else can they do? Well, they can do nails. Well, what else can they do? Well, then the fashion of the eyelashes, which you and I probably have
experience. Yeah, I don't really understand, but.
I totally get it. But they do a wonderful job. And we've, you know, people, we have specific people who just go there for nails. So they're learning how to be enterprises on their own. And really, to me, that's enlightening and to watch. And you know, I told you before when I was went to Armenia, I was just proud of how the people were able to do so much with so little, and that this gives them more ammunition, more power, a greater foundation to be able to do more and be on their own. And we're not we'll get into that in a second. Not quite done yet. And I do have a habit of driving Peter a little crazy because he tells me he's going to do one thing. And then I say, well, what about these other three things? So it's actually all done in good humor. But there are other projects that can happen and people can be involved in different ways. And even to the you know, I don't know how many things. we can talk about, but the making the environment of the area better. We're trying to get rid of domeeks, and had a very successful fundraiser to do that. And you're doing political intervention, and so it takes all these different things to keep making sure that the process is what's important. It's not the individuals.
No, that's terrific. You know, there's one thing I think we can add to this discussion, and that's the Assyrian Honey Enterprise. You know, that's a rural project. It doesn't really belong in Gyumri, but I'm very happy to say, with both your support and the support of others through our Adopt a Hive effort that we've made over the last month or so, we've located a village outside of Gyumri. So it's in the sort of greater Gyumri metropolitan area. But it's a rural setting where sort of honey belongs. And it looks like we're going to be able to expand that into that village this coming season. So why don't you take a second and talk a bit about the honey effort. And
well, the honey effort really I like, you know, you get some certain enjoyment out of watching certain kids do things. You get certain enjoyment out of watching that, because to me, it epitomizes everything that you could do right. And in rural Armenia, everybody is an entrepreneurial person in mind, and
or certainly needs to be if they're not yet.
If they don't do that, then they'll get enlisted in the army. So it's just a wonderful process, and we built the community kitchen to allow them to do the honey, but do it the right way, which has always been one of our credos. The first sentence in anything is, it doesn't matter how much you make if you don't make it right. And the people, apparently the honey making is for farmers is not new to them. And I'm in the process of getting some information together to maybe develop a school curriculum where people take this with them in secondary school, using the 4-H model here in the United States, and been in contact with some people there. And I have to work through with Peter what his objects would be, objectives would be. But that's certainly something that if we could standardize it and make it like certify it, standardize, then we would feel better about training these kids to have their own little honeybee farms, and then the collective honey then could be sold through the ICAPAR honey project, and then we could import it, and we'd become famous importers, and then taking all that money and put it back into doing something else like agribusiness. You spoke about the honey business. It just puts a smile on my face, and I did it for my grandchildren. I gave them things, and now they say, "Oh, I have honeybees, and this is how you act for bee and things like that." So it's really been good, but it's thanks to your foresight and kind of showing the way with some of this stuff.
It's a pretty sweet project.
Well,
Peter was waiting a long time to say that.
Yeah, as you know, it is actually pretty good. I will.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, throughout all of your philanthropic involvement in Armenia and in Gyumri, what is the biggest lesson you've learned throughout this whole process?
Trust, but verify. If you have a good idea, see it to its conclusion. It's just like marriage, though. You're only as happy as your partner. And there are a lot of good organizations in Armenia that are doing great work. And you just have to take the time to see which one that you blend in better with. And if you don't have a great deal of means, now with social media and these things like that, they have processes where it wouldn't take a lot for you to get involved. I do believe that the diaspora is easy to convince to do something if you present a program to them, which is detailed and something that they can follow and they can understand. It's not some esoteric issue. It's, yeah, we need to have a kindergarten built at this school. This is how much it costs. These are the people that do it. Do you think that's a worthwhile project? Yes or no? And then they will tend to get involved. That's what's there. And there's a forever need because of, you know, the process there. And then if you don't want to be involved, then don't be involved. I mean, I'm not going to convince you that that's the greatest thing you should ever do if it's not in part of your own viscera. But the people in the diaspora, people say Armenians sometimes have, short arms and things like that about not being generous. They're unbelievably generous if you present to them a project that is easy to follow and understand, and they have a likelihood of knowing it'll reach a conclusion. I mean, we've raised money for Peter's group and other groups, and we had just as many people who were on pensions give us money as non-pensions. So it kind of reminds you that people want to help. They just sometimes don't know how to help. And I Peter and I talk quite a bit about what can Pados do better and these other groups do better. And I think there's a nurturing, a seed sowing process that I think some of the foundations miss when they just put their name up and they have a gala and you're supposed to go. Well, that's not the way that you get people the groundswell of support doesn't come from things like that. It comes from them having some a view of what you're doing and that they have an understanding that you're going to carry it out.
Wow. No, that's terrific. I think that's dead on. You know, there's so much to do and so many worthy causes and so many worthy organizations, and prioritizing and articulating to potential people their involvement is always, and opportunities for them is always very key. And that, you know, that kind of parlays into our signature question. We always like to wrap up the last question of our podcast with, something that's relatively a softball, but, you know, as people listen to you and your involvement and your family's commitments, it's a source of motivation for them. So we always ask our guests, you know, what can people do to be involved?
I think really that they have to just decide on their own that they want to be involved, and then open up their computers or whatever it is to the social media. Now it's easy to understand what these groups are doing. And then if you want to get into like the goals project which is Girls of Armenia, you know, doing leadership through soccer, there are ways you could start and give some money and then see if you like the feeling that you get when you do that, and are you getting the proper information back? Some people give money and don't care about getting information. So that's probably the first thing. The second thing is, if you're involved in getting together with other people of your same ilk to support something, like let's say all the kids at Michigan State or Armenian kids at University of Michigan, pooling their money together. Yeah. Pulling their monies together to support a project for sending kids to college in Armenia. I think those sorts of things plant a seed more deeply, and the roots are better than if you just want to, give $20 here for Christmas or for Mother's Day. That can also help too, but I think doing it as a community, I think it helps a lot makes the process actually fun. And then if you make it fun, then you'll do it. And as people go to Armenia, I don't think it's hard to convince them that there's work to be done there. But it's also not hard to convince them that people are actually addressing what's going on and helping the future generations of Armenia so they can survive.
That's a terrific answer. Every time Sophia asks me that question as part of the podcast, I just tell people to go to Armenia.
Well, it's interesting because my wife at least speaks Armenian. I unfortunately, my family was from Sepastia, so half of the Armenian I thought it was Armenian was really Turkish. So I was kind of embarrassed. So at Debbie Arach, I said, I'm just not going to say anything. So that was pretty good. But no, it's listen, it just totally amazes me how entrepreneurial the Syrian Armenians are coming out of that war-torn hellhole that they were raising in. And within 3 to 5 years, they're owning restaurants, they hire people, they're doing stuff. And it gives a vibe. I don't know if it's quite like old Lebanon, but it actually is very inviting. Let's just say that. And you're proud of what they're doing and that sort of thing. And I've never met an Armenian anywhere who wasn't proud to say that they were Armenian. So I guess that tells you something. And the fact that we're still here is important.
Definitely. Definitely. Well, thank you so much for shedding some light on, social enterprises and the work that you've been doing in Armenia. It's incredible to watch. And we look forward to seeing the continued impact that it makes.
Well, thanks so much for having me. And we are actually trying to make Armenia a food exporter. And I think we will get there in the next 10 years. So you heard it here first.
Yeah, we'll be supporters of that.
All right.
Thank you so much, Gary.
Thanks. Good to talk to you both.
Thank you. And thank you to all of our listeners. We hope you have a good day.